Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by ServPro. Cleaning, restoration, construction.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I love shows like we get to do today because there's a lot going on, a lot of it sort of in the category of rumor. Some of it can't be reported officially, but we're going to try to make sense of a lot of stuff, including before we're done here, you know, a few minutes from now, interesting recruiting rumor out there for Georgia that could have reverberations with more than just one player. So we're going to cover all of that here coming up in just a little bit. Prior to that, though, transfer portal does open today. We pleaded ignorance yesterday about why there was so much weird, like sort of misinformation. And admittedly, we contributed to this. I swear to you, you can go, there's an NCAA website somewhere that said the transfer portal opened April 15th. I promise you I saw that at one point. I promise you I did. But we kind of operate on the assumption the portal was going to open April 15th, but it actually opens today. We are kind of in the midst of all of this here right now, where we know Georgia, like everybody else, is likely to lose some players, including coming up. We kind of have some confirmation, at least one of those guys. We'll get to that here coming up in a second. But we know it's going to be more than probably just one player here for Georgia. And for the most part, every program is somewhat likely to deal with this. Some will be more in the sort of buy category than the sell category. But still, every program in some form or fashion going to be touched here by the transfer portal over the course of the next couple of weeks, even if it's ultimately not quite as apocalyptic as some of the talking heads out there have suggested that it might be. When it comes to this kind of stuff, though, I always like Kirby Smart's sort of outward approach to this. And I do think that there's one thing that Kirby Smart just sort of innately gets, and you could never get him to talk about this because it's sort of just not really in his character to do that. But Kirby Smart sort of, I think, innately gets the need to sort of express an outward image of confidence and an outward image of we're not panicked and we're not flailing. You know, we're not grasping at straws here, that we are going to embrace tough times, good times, challenging times, hard times. We're just going to embrace it all, and we're going to do it with just a sort of sense of we'll figure out whatever it is. He presents a very confident image no matter what the situation at hand might be. So on Saturday, post G-Day, knowing that this transfer portal period for 15 days kind of looms, Kirby Smart was asked about, you know, what are your sort of mental preparations or your organizational preparations to get ready for what's coming here? And once again, Kirby Smart sort of projected the idea of whatever it is, we're ready to deal with it. This is what Kirby Smart said on Saturday.
Can I control it?
No.
No, I can't. So if I concern myself with things I can't control, I won't live long. I mean, there's just too much out there. So it's really one of those things where it's like, do you want to be here or do you not? Because they know how we do things by now. They all know. They said that was the easiest practice we've had all spring. So they enjoyed it thoroughly. And if guys want to be somewhere else, I have no control over that.
So that's Kirby Smart saying, listen, if I can't control it, I'm not going to be worried about it. Once again, I love the fact that Kirby Smart projects outwardly that level of confidence of, hey, we're not panicked here. We're not running around. We're not buying into what some have said about rosters being gutted and, you know, all the kind of crazy stuff that you sometimes hear. We're not going to be impacted by that. Now, behind the scenes, do I believe that there's a little bit of a different posture perhaps being adopted by Georgia? I think that's probably the case, because while Kirby says, listen, we can't control this, in a roundabout way, you do have some control over. In other words, if so-and-so player comes to you and says, so-and-so school's offering me X number of dollars to leave and go there, there is an NIL apparatus at place at Georgia that could potentially match some of that. It comes down to whether Georgia wants to do that or not, whether the NIL collective wants to do that or not. But there is some control over some of these decisions. And it's true at Georgia and other places that when a player leaves, sometimes it was a situation where the program that had the player did not quite think the effort was necessary to keep the player in the program. And the exodus is sort of an example of, we think we might be okay without you. But one way or another, there is some control that can be exerted behind the scene. It's just simply a matter of, in a place like Georgia, do you want to do that for an individual player or not? But either way, Kirby's going to project an overall level of confidence about some of this kind of stuff. Now, we're already seeing some example of the transfer portal stuff starting to happen for UGA. Coming out yesterday, and I'll show you this on the screen, Andrew Paul, running back, who, as we mentioned on yesterday's show, I kind of like some of what I saw from Paul on G-Day, and he probably played during that spring scrimmage in such a way that made me think, hey, maybe we didn't talk quite enough about him during spring practice. But ultimately, maybe it's the absence of chatter that's decided for Paul that he's better off going somewhere else. He put this out on Instagram and gave it to Hayes Fawcett from over at On3 that he's now on the move. You're hearing some early chatter here about maybe Georgia State for Paul. I've heard a couple of different people kind of mention that as a possibility. Maybe that's the case, or maybe Andrew Paul will end up going, you know, somewhere else. But I think the Paul thing is a little bit of an example of the kind of transfer that Georgia fans expect to happen. And in a roundabout way, and this is not meant to disrespect Paul as a player, this is the sort of thing that some Georgia fans are saying, well, if all it is Andrew Paul, then we might be okay, because Andrew Paul is right now perhaps fighting to be the number three running back on the Georgia roster. And if Paul leaves, you've still got guys like Roderick Robinson and Trevor Etienne, more on them coming up in a moment. You've still got Nate Frazier coming in this summer. You've still got Branson Robinson working his way back from injury. You've still, you know, got a Chauncey Bowens, another incoming freshman running back, who's going to be kind of a part of the mix there as well. You've still kind of got other running backs that, once again, no disrespect to Paul, who I thought looked pretty good on Saturday, but there's a feeling among Georgia fans that would say, well, if all it is Andrew Paul, then maybe we're okay. And if this is truly an example of a guy like Paul leaving Georgia to go to Georgia State, perhaps that sort of confirms that idea for Georgia fans even more. However, I do want to point something out about this, because I do think the story of a guy like Paul and the story of other players that Georgia's lost over the course of the last couple of years, I do think it demonstrates a way in which college football is changing. And this is not like panic peddling. I'm not telling you, and this is a reason if you're a Georgia fan, you need to be worried. But I do think you need to be noticing the way in which things are different than they were just a few years ago. And I think the coaching staffs themselves at Georgia and other places need to kind of think about this kind of thing there as well. For instance, we would say, well, Andrew Paul may have only been the number three running back at a place like Georgia. But at a place like Georgia, history would show us that number three running backs, they do matter. Think about the 2017 SEC championship game. For whatever reason, that came to my mind today. Georgia's number three running back that year was DeAndre Swift, obviously an elite recruit, but he was number three on the depth chart for Georgia at the time, and he had the touchdown against Auburn that day that sort of put the game on ice and allowed Georgia to win, you know, 28-7. Now, I'm not here to tell you if this had been, you know, 2017 with the transfer portal the way that it is now that Swift would have left, but I am here to tell you that Swift and other players like him throughout the years here at UGA under Kirby Smart have been an example of what Georgia has made the sort of bedrock foundation of the success the program has enjoyed. In fact, I remember this winter of 2015, turning the calendar to 2016, when Kirby Smart was first hired as head coach. A lot of people believe that Georgia was in really good shape with a really good roster the moment that Kirby Smart started the job here. But I remember the time Kirby Smart, when he was asked about what Georgia needed and how well set up for success he thought Georgia was, one of the things that Smart said a lot was in these early press conferences and early interviews that he did, he said he felt like Georgia needed more depth, more depth. That's the word that he used a lot. In fact, all these years later, the word depth is still a word that Kirby Smart uses an awful lot in talking about what he likes or what he wants to see more of from UGA. In fact, if you wanted to kind of just sort of whittle down what has been the national championship formula, this is obviously an oversimplification, but if you wanted to simplify it as much as you possibly could of what the national championship formula has been during the college football playoff era, where a small number of teams have hoarded so much elite talent, that you would say, listen, national championship teams develop national championship depth. They have a lot of players at a lot of positions. Ultimately, you never really know who's going to be good and who's not, so therefore you have a long list of names in your depth chart, and you just sort of hope for the best. But in the transfer portal era, college football, I believe, is going to start looking a lot more like the NFL, where in the NFL, every offseason, you have salary cap casualties and guys that you bring in you can't really keep. As veteran players get older, they get more expensive, and so therefore you have to let them go and they go play other places. When you listen to NFL coaches talk about their teams, they don't use the word depth nearly as frequently as college coaches have, because college coaches, because of the 85-man roster and the ability to go out there and be just more aggressive in recruiting, some teams are able to develop more depth, and depth has been the secret to the success for teams like Georgia that have won national championships. But in this transfer portal age, there will just be less depth to go around. And so when you think about the future championship formula for UGA and the portal slash NIL age, the task of winning is going to require doing so without as much depth as you've been used to in the past. And that, I believe, is just an unavoidable fact. Now, Georgia, for the most part, is bracing to lose a few players over the course of the next 14 to 15 days. Probably not bracing to add all that many. It, for the most part, did its transfer work back during the winter period. But we are led to believe that Georgia could perhaps consider bringing in a transfer quarterback. It had tried to do that with Jade Maiva from UNLV back during the winter. That was sort of a short-lived story. But Kirby Smart has made it very clear, including again on Saturday, that they do want four scholarship quarterbacks. No matter how promising a prospect Ryan Puglisi could be when his knee injury is healed, and no matter how good we think Gunnar Stockton could be as he works his way through the program over the course of his career here, Georgia still wants that full complement of scholarship quarterbacks, and Kirby doesn't make any bones about that, including admitting that when he was asked about Stockton on Saturday. Here's Kirby Smart again.
Our goal is to have four and a really good walk-on. That's the goal. We think we've got a preferred walk-on kid that's a really good player that's coming in, and excited about him. We thought he was a really good player in our state. But, you know, we'll see what happens. I can't predict the portal. I wouldn't even try to. You know, I'm worried about our guys and the retention of our players.
So I think the Kirby's right about that, that thinking about who you might lose right now is more important than who you might gain. But it's at least a possibility Georgia could have its eye on the portal for a transfer quarterback. But the overall bottom line is this. Andrew Paul was the start of what we expect to be a series of names over the course of the next few days. We're a partisan Georgia show. Of course, we want the best for UGA. So therefore, we're hoping that the kinds of names we continue to hear, no disrespect, are those names of guys sort of the third string variety who are kind of fighting for their chance at playing time and maybe see the grass greener being somewhere else, and not the sort of more high profile situation where perhaps money became a factor in what is a starter or contributing level player for Georgia moving on to go somewhere else. But obviously in this day and age, anything is possible, and some of that can only be known once we see it play out. But the one thing we know for a fact, the day and age of hoarding far better players than everybody else that you play and having third and fourth string guys that could be potential starters at other places in college football, some of that is likely coming to an end. Some of the people who championed the advent of the transfer portal in the NIL age did so with the belief that it could at least possibly level the playing field somewhat in college football. And to a certain extent, that's probably been true. And guys at Georgia who have waited their turn and been deep backups for a couple of years, maybe they do see their chance to play somewhere else. Maybe they will leave. And here right now at a place like Georgia and all across college football, that is just simply an unavoidable fact. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by ServPro. And we're happy to have you with us. No matter how you get to us, live on video, 10 a.m., Facebook, YouTube, all kinds of video platforms, dognation.com, Twitch, whatever that is. We're on all these video platforms, and we're just happy to have you as a part of the program. Radio, Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, podcasts, obviously our original platform. And we're still having a good time speaking to folks there each and every day. In fact, our loyal audience on the podcast show drops right there at noon. You're always right there to scoop that up. We always appreciate all of that. And we appreciate our friends at ServPro for making it all possible for you here there as well. And listen, when you find yourself as a homeowner or as a property owner of any kind, let's say you've got a rental property that you use for passive income, or you've got a commercial property where your business is located, I think one of the things you know is when you kind of, you know, invest in and have real estate, the last thing you want is some sort of major damage that happens to that, that all of a sudden leaves you with a huge mess to clean up and a lot of, you know, concern. Fire, water intrusion, things like that. That's where the restoration specialists of ServPro want to step in. They can put all that back together, handle the cleanup, and fix it back for you and make it look like it never even happened. It's almost like a magic trick the way in which they work, and I have seen that in my life firsthand. You can see that for yourself there as well when you find ServPro online. S-E-R-V, ServPro.com. That's the website, S-E-R-V, ServPro.com. You've heard me talk about them now for a while. I want this to be a trigger in your mind. Hopefully you don't have some sort of, you know, fire breakout, or hopefully you don't have water line break or you know, leaky roof or whatever causes the issue. Hopefully you don't have that happen. But if you do, if you see major damage, a major mess that has to be cleaned up, I want you to connect in your mind the restoration specialist of ServPro to help you get that done. Each and every franchise, independently owned and operated, proud partners of us here on Dog Nation Daily each and every Tuesday. Find them online, ServPro.com, S-E-R-V, ServPro.com for more on that. All right, we got Connor Riley here coming up. Busy day with Connor. As I told you before, there's a really interesting recruiting rumor that's out there that I'm going to address with Connor. I'm going to sort of save that for him. Georgia also got to commit this weekend. We're going to talk about that with him coming up in a little bit too there as well. I've got some news on shows for next week. I'm going to push that off to the side here for a moment too. We'll get more into this here coming up in just a little bit there as well. Instead, let me kind of focus on the conversation we've been having as we go around the doghouse here today. So if you're Andrew Paul, player that we think's got a bright future in college football and would have loved to have, you know, seen him stay at Georgia if there was room for him, you certainly would have loved that. But you got to think he's also kind of looking around and saying, man, there are a lot of good running backs here at UGA right now. And I do think that was one of the things about G-Day that I thought, you know, kind of got Georgia fans, you know, feeling pretty good, was the overall performance of the Georgia, you know, running back situation. And one of the guys we've been hearing a lot about was Trevor Etienne. I think for the most part, in the sort of limited number of touches that Etienne got on Saturday, I think you kind of saw why there has been the excitement about him that there has been for the upcoming year. After the game on Saturday, Kirby Smart did talk about Trevor Etienne. And in light of the fact the Georgia running back depth just got a little bit thinner with Paul's departure, what Kirby said about Etienne really matters. So this is Kirby after G-Day on a transfer running back that Georgia added here this offseason, Trevor Etienne. This is Kirby Smart.
He's a good back. He's explosive. He's quick in and out of the hole. He's, you know, different than what we've had. I think Swift analogy is good. Cook's analogy is good. He's really taken a lot of personal pride in working on his protection, and he had a nice pickup today. He's learning the offense. I mean, look, the guy's a he's been a good SEC player for 2 years. It's not like he's a freshman. He's a really good player. He's a really good kid, and I've been proud of the way he's handled everything since his deal.
So listen, when Kirby Smart uses the word explosive as early in that clip as he does, that's what Georgia fans want to hear about a guy like Trevor Etienne. And when Smart doesn't shy away from a comparison of a guy like, say, you know, James Cook and, you know, I think it was DeAndre Swift, some of the other names that he mentioned there, once again, that's an archetype that has worked really well for Georgia in the past. So, I mean, I think one of the takeaways that you would have, you know, from G-Day is a guy like Trevor Etienne proved to be as advertised and proved to be a little bit of a different kind of running back than what we've sort of seen Georgia have. And perhaps a perfect pairing for a guy like Roderick Robinson, which once again, you know, you'd heard really good things. And some of the stuff about Rod Rob actually sort of predates spring practice. I feel like when we were kind of early days of 2024 in January and February, you know, kind of coming off the Orange Bowl, there was already some chatter. I don't know if it was based on offseason workouts or what it was based on, but it seems like Robinson had a little steam behind him even before we got into spring practice. And, you know, on Saturday, I once again like some of the stuff that Robinson did because it's the oldest cliche in the book. I totally understand this. But the notion of the thunder and the lightning, the quick explosive style running back, which Etienne might be, and the more thunderous running back willing to lower the shoulder, that's what Roderick Robinson might be. He did not shy away from contact on Saturday, which is kind of, you know, true to form for him. We're obviously led to believe based on some of the stuff we've also seen there as well. And, you know, some of the stuff with Rod Rob also kind of came in the passing game a little bit too. So one of the, I think the really fun takeaways, and John Stinchcomb and I talked about this yesterday, one of the really fun takeaways from G-Day was I was a little bit more impressed by the running game than I maybe expected, you know, to be. And Robinson was a factor in this, and Kirby Smart also talked about that on Saturday there as well. Let's hear Kirby Smart again.
He keeps getting better. He's got toughness. I enjoy coaching Rod. He takes coaching well. a big physical guy that you want to get more out of him, and he's given us what he's got. He's got to continue to work on his pass protection. He's become a better route runner. I'm pleased with where Rod is, and he needs to be even better for us next year.
So Georgia last year was third in the SEC in yards per carry, and you know that's about where you kind of want to see kind of Georgia getting back to, kind of middle of the pack in the national championship era in the SEC from a rushing yards per game standpoint. Some of that's just simply because Georgia, you know, throws it more than it used to. But when you think about the best of Georgia, you know, it's that ability to kind of find those at times explosive runs and turn a 4 and 5 yard gain into a 10, 15 yard gain. And all of a sudden provide in the running game the type of performances that keeps a defense on its heels to go with what we think is going to be a really explosive passing attack this year. And I do think that there's a lot of reason for optimism with the Georgia running backs. It seems like the makeup of that room is a little bit different than it's been, but the component pieces appear to be there, that even minus an Andrew Paul who announced he's transferring, even minus that, the possibility perhaps this is the best Georgia running back situation that it's been in a few years, I'd say there's a chance that could very well be true. We'll obviously be following that here very closely. And that is Around the Doghouse here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by ServPro. Now, as I told you, we've got a lot to do before we're done. There is big transfer news involving an SEC rival for UJ. We'll get to that here. A SEC coach is kind of complaining about the current situation, even though seemingly the situation has benefited him more often than not. We'll give you new details on that here in a bit there as well. But for now, on what the portal opening means for Georgia and a couple of very interesting pieces of recruiting news, let's cover all that ground right now. Connor Riley here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by ServPro.
And across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
All right, Connor Riley joins us, and Connor and I actually talked about this off-air on Saturday. Connor, I promise you, you can go to, like, NCAA websites, and it said the portal opens April 15th. I promise we can find that. There was all kinds of dispute about whether the portal opens the 15th or the 16th. As you pointed out on Saturday, it's only 15 days, and so if that was the 15th, it'd actually be 16 days of portal time. So perhaps I should have done the arithmetic in my head. But either way, the portal is open now. We know the first Georgia name in there. That's the running back Andrew Paul. Where does it go from here? Do the names get bigger than Paul, if you had to predict? Or is it going to be more like this for Georgia, where it's, you know, guys that I think contributed depth, guys that you would love to see more of in a Georgia uniform, but just not room for everybody? Some players hearing the promise of more playing time to be available other places. Is it more of this, or does the news get more precarious as this 15-day period plays out?
If I had to guess here, and I'm not going to name specific names, but I believe that it is going to be more along the lines of Andrew Paul-type players. I would first sort of look at guys who didn't play in Georgia's spring game on Saturday. Andrew Paul did. Only had 4 carries on the day, was clearly the third string running back. And when you factor in, this team is going to get Brenson Robinson back. They're bringing in Nate Frazier. It's not a surprise to see Georgia lose a running back in that regard. Similarly, I think wide receiver is a position where maybe if there's a player who hasn't played much or done much in his first 2 years on campus, he might look elsewhere. I think defensive back is another position there as well, where you have some guys who are clearly behind other players on the depth chart right now. And so I think wide receiver and defensive back are maybe the other positions where you could maybe potentially see Georgia lose a player. But at this point, I don't expect it to be any of these big names. So there was a lot of fear-mongering by those in the national media that, oh, this April window is going to be big and wild and whatnot. And I just don't believe that to be the case here. I think a lot of these guys that are looking to move and play elsewhere are going down in competition. And for the most part, it is not these so-called big name starters, these top of the line guys. You know, last year we even had a Bear Alexander in the transfer portal. Right. I don't think there's going to be a player of that caliber from Georgia's roster this year to enter the transfer portal.
So let me ask you a couple questions about this. Thing number one, before you joined us, I was talking about how even if it is, and I'm going to use air quotes here because I'm not meaning disrespect the player, just Andrew Paul. I think Andrew Paul's a good player. I'm not trying to disrespect him. But
looked great on Saturday.
Yeah, he looked really good. But he's also like no higher than number 3 on the depth chart for UGA right now. Even if that's all this portal stuff is, Connor, I still believe that represents a pretty tremendous sea change for college football overall, where I would say like the major foundation for national champions in this playoff era, which includes Georgia a couple of times, includes Bama, includes, you know, teams like that. It's been what coaches like to call championship level depth, that the main way you win championships is by just having a larger number of good quality players, above the line players, to use a phrase that Smart's used a lot, than the team that you're playing. You sort of overwhelm your opponent with the sheer numbers that you have on your roster. And I do think that part of college football is probably changing here some, where the sport is becoming, in another way, a little bit more like the NFL, because you don't hear NFL coaches talk about depth, because veteran players, as they get older, they get more expensive and they're gone. And so therefore, you're turning to a cheaper player who's probably not as good, but as a coach, it's your job to make him into something, because that's all you got on a 53-man roster. And I don't think that college football is all the way to that point, but this idea that you've got third and fourth string players who would start for other SEC teams, maybe there was a time in which Bama had that. Maybe there has been a time in which Georgia has that. I think there is going to be a lot less of that moving forward, and I do think that difference matters. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think going forward, the name of the game is going to be how quickly can you get these new players in your program coached up, whether they come from the recruiting ranks or they come from the transfer portal, because players are just going to cycle out quicker and quicker now. You know, you see in the NFL level, if you hit on a really great draft class where you land 3-4 quality starters in one draft, it really extends and opens up a window for you to compete. I think I did the numbers before, obviously, Chad Lindbergh and Andrew Paul had entered the transfer portal, but I think 60 of the 89 players on Georgia's roster were in either their first or second year in the program this spring. That's just a massive amount of your roster that is still new to learning how things are done. And you hear coaches talk so much about the biggest growth goes from game one to game two, year one to year two, spring one to spring two. And in some ways, we did see that. You look at what Dominic Lovett, I think, did on Saturday and has really done throughout this spring. He's just a better player in year two in the program than he is in year one. And I think that speaks to, you know, this erosion of championship depth, the idea that you're just going to be able to hoard your roster and keep it together for 3-4 seasons. That's no longer going to be the case. And going forward, you're going to see more and more guys like an Andrew Paul type player. Not to take anything away from Andrew, I think he could potentially go, you know, to a school like a Baylor, a Houston, a TCU, and go and play real minutes there and earn real carries. But those days are just gone, and you have to be able to identify guys that are going to be able to help you right away, or if guys that are going to take a little bit longer to see the field are willing to be patient there, because it's becoming a more tricky needle to thread in the modern day of college football.
All right, so last thing on this topic, then we'll move on and look at some other stuff. You mentioned both wide receiver and defensive back. Here's where I think, like, pretending to be Kirby Smart gets kind of interesting, because I honestly think there are a couple of different ways to look at this. On the one hand, for the kinds of players in your defensive back room and your wide receiver room that you don't want to lose, the easiest way to prevent that from happening is to say, we're just going to rotate a bunch. And I mean, to use the defensive secondary in particular here, there were some fairly substantial transfer rumors involving, you know, a couple of guys in that group going back to around the time of the Orange Bowl. And so the easiest thing to do to keep all those guys happy is just rotate a lot, to say, we're going to play four cornerbacks with regularity. We may even play multiple safety, something that Georgia hasn't always done. We're going to play a bunch of different guys, try to keep guys healthy. The flip side of that, though, is that perhaps you run into a situation where your best four or your best five aren't always on the field because you're trying to rotate and keep guys happy. Same type of thing with the wide receiver spot, where maybe, you know, you don't have your best three, your best four, you know, kind of rotating. You've got more guys in there spreading the touches around and hopefully kind of keeping guys happy from a team chemistry standpoint. So what I'm building to here is a question. If you were in the job of being Kirby Smart, are you managing those position groups, large in numbers, you know, frequency of transfer across all of college football in those two spots? Are you managing in such a way to keep the most guys happy as possible? Or are you managing that in such a way to make sure your three, four, or in some cases five best guys are on the field?
I'm managing it to keep the most guys happy, because I think especially as you see college football schedule extend and get longer with a deeper college football playoff field, you mentioned the NFL a few minutes ago, and I think it's a great point to bring up. Like, you see so often at the end of the season, you're just hoping that you're able to avoid that big key injury. And so being able to develop depth at those positions, I think, is still really important. And you mentioned defensive back, where it does look like they're going to be rotating more, both at safety and cornerback, where, I mean, you go back and look at some of those early Kirby Smart teams, J.R. Reed never came off the field for Georgia. Eric Stokes never came off the field for Georgia. So I think you're starting to see those positions rotate more. I think you look and see what Georgia has done on the offensive line, where for years, the theory was always you play your best five guys, you develop continuity there. Well, with Georgia recruiting so well on the offensive line and having such great talent, they've begun to employ a rotation there on the offensive line. They did it with Broderick Jones at the tackle spot. They did it with Amarius Mims at the tackle spot. They're going to do it again this year with Monroe Freeling and Micah Morris, in my opinion, at the guard and tackle spots, respectively. So I think that this is something that you've seen him tweak going forward. Obviously, he's taken a lot of criticism for the way that he chooses to use Georgia's wide receivers and sort of spread the ball around rather than really lean on three, four guys. That's worked out for Georgia for the most part. Alabama did something different in 2021, and it didn't work out for them, as you saw John Metchie and Jameson Williams go down with season-ending injuries. So I think, well, and I understand, you know, wanting to have your three, four best guys. I think to have the ability to develop depth over the course of the season also leaves you the option, like I think we saw in that 2022 national championship game with the offensive line, where like, hey, it's time where we have to make a decision and play our best five guys, and we're going to do this. And we don't necessarily know if this is going to work out, but we do have it in our bag. I think it's better to go about that way than to go all in on just one set of guys at the position.
All right, so let me move specifically to the Andrew Paul news and the running back position overall. And I guess let me start with this. Do you think Paul could have held off an incoming Nate Frazier and remain the number three back over Frazier? Or do you see, you know, prior to this Paul news, Frazier possibly overtaking him? And I guess if you want to mention a Chauncey Bowens in this, or a recovering from injury Branson Robinson in this, you can there as well. Do you think that Paul could have held off these other guys and remained the number three running back? Because if he was the number three running back, then he's playing some for Georgia, at least in most years. Do you think Paul could have held off these other guys and been number three back at Georgia?
I think he could have, but the problem that Andrew ran into is that you look at him and his size and what some of those other running backs in this room are able to do. Obviously, Trevor Etienne is just a very different running back. I think Nate Frazier, comparatively, is just a very different running back in terms of his skill set. Andrew Paul and Roderick Robinson have similar skill sets. And coming out of that spring game, it was very clear, and it's been clear, I think, this whole spring by those that have been able to watch those practices, Roderick Robinson had just passed Andrew Paul on the depth chart. And so with Roderick Robinson sort of emerging as that between the tackles runner a la Elijah Holyfield in 2018, I think that sort of let the writing on the wall be known that, like, hey, Georgia feels very good about what they have in Roderick Robinson. They like his physical running style. And it is a little bit similar to the skill set that Andrew Paul had. And so if you're looking at this in a way of, okay, how do you go about getting the most out of your running back room? I think the emergence of Roderick Robinson and the spring that he had is the biggest reason that Andrew Paul is perhaps looking elsewhere rather than the incoming additions of a Nate Frazier, a Dwight Phillips Jr., and then obviously freshman Chauncey Bowens, who's already here this spring.
And then, you know, we talked a little bit before you joined us about Etienne and Robinson, kind of that sort of perfect cliched pairing of the guy who looks more like the Lightning, the guy that looks more like the Thunder. But either way, I thought both those guys in their own form appeared to be fairly well as advertised on Saturday. I know it's really easy to kind of like bet the over on every individual Georgia player during this time of year. I totally get that. But I mean, I think it's within the realm of possibility this could be the best Georgia running back room in a few years here, including a couple of teams that won national championships. I think this could be a pretty good running back situation for Georgia here this year.
Yeah, they have complementary skill sets. And so I think really for the first time since that Zamir White, James Cook backfield in 2021, you've got guys that can do everything for you. I think you were impressed with what you saw from Trevor Etienne in terms of his pass catching ability, but also Roderick Robinson did some nice things there as well. And then you see the cuts, the start-stop ability that Etienne has, along with just the bruising nature that Roderick Robinson brings to the table. I think they complement each other well. And so to have that for the first time in a while, I think gives you a full array of skills that you can use these running backs for. So I think when you add in Nate Frazier, potentially what he might be able to give you this offseason coming in from Mater Dei High School, you see what Trevor Etienne was able to do on Saturday. Well, yeah, it's not a ton of reps at that running back position. Carson Beck threw the ball 46 times. Gunnar Stockton threw it 37. I don't think Georgia's going to have a game this year where they throw the ball more than 37 times. So you're going to see this running back game and running back room do more once the season rolls around. But In flashes, I think you have to like what you saw out of both Trevor Etienne and Roger Robinson on Saturday.
I'm a little bit ashamed. It's like 10:35 on a Tuesday. Georgia took a four-star defensive lineman's commitment on Saturday. We're kind of just now getting to it. I'm not super happy about that. I'm really not. But we've also had kind of a lot going on, so we're just trying to do the best we can. But the point here is that, Connor, for all the talk about transfer portal and all the talk about this and that, high school football recruiting is still the most important thing going on here. It's still the name of the game, and it is for the foreseeable future unless an even weirder change comes. And the only teams that recruit and sign four-star defensive linemen are like the serious players. Like, I mean, this is not a clown show thing to do. Like if you're signing four-star defensive linemen out of high school, then you're sort of playing at the highest possible level, which obviously Georgia still does. So getting Darren Akinabon, the recruit here out of New Jersey, I think for Georgia just sort of represents the fact, and we know this, but Georgia is still playing the game at the highest possible level, and it's still doing the sort of nuts and bolts, bread and butter type stuff that you've got to do to compete at the highest possible level. I also like the fact that the pipeline in New Jersey seems to be still open post-Fran Brown. I think that matters. New Jersey as a state has more talent than some people probably realize. And so being able to go up there and get players and just the Northeast in general when possible is, you know, kind of a nice thing to be able to do. I can't give you an individual breakdown necessarily all that much on a Kinnabon's game, but I'm always going to want four-star defensive linemen. And the fact that Georgia is open for business in that category is one of the reasons this team for the foreseeable future is going to keep competing for championships. Anything to add on the commitment that Georgia took on Saturday?
Yeah, Akinabon certainly has the makings of a varsity athlete. And I think, you know, Chidera Uzodiribe deserves some big credit here for helping land Akinabon. You know, the Nigerian roots there are something that you've seen Georgia pick up more and more in recent cycles since Chidera Uzodiribe came on to join the staff. Gabe Harris is kind of a player that he's been compared to a little bit, which I think if you watch G-Day at all, should excite you a lot. Great size here with what he brings. And as you mentioned, BA, you know, the ability to recruit defensive linemen is still paramount here at the University of Georgia. And so you look at what Joseph Jonah Ajayi is going to be able to potentially do. You bring in Akinabon, who could be an edge, could be a defensive end. We'll sort of see how Georgia goes about employing him. I think going forward, that line, as you sort of saw with Michael Williams, Joseph Jonah Ajayi this spring, is going to be a little bit more and more blurry moving forward. But these are just the types of guys you need. And, you know, in the Georgia household, defensive linemen are a hero, and that's the end of the story. So I think for Georgia, this is a commitment that you really, really like to get. And the fact that, again, after Fran Brown leaves, you're still able to go into New Jersey and still recruit on a national level to land a defensive lineman of this caliber is really, really good.
Connor is very well known for dropping pop cultural references in some of his commentary. When it's a Taylor Swift song lyric, I don't always get it, but if it's a line from The Sopranos, those I am definitely going to get. And so we enjoyed getting a couple of those there. Quick follow-up on this, because there's another topic we've got to address. Is it fair to say that, like, defensive end, the sort of thing that Gabe Harris looks like he's going to do very well for Georgia at some point in time? I really liked Harris on Saturday. Thought that was a lot of fun. Is it fair to say that defensive end, at times, a little bit of a tough sell for recruits? They like the idea of being 4-3 defensive end. It's more than they like the idea of being 3-4 defensive ends. That's one. There's a little bit of cross-training that goes on at the edge rush, sort of stand-up position. But while it may be a little bit of a tough sell, Trayvon Walker obviously became a number one overall draft pick in that spot. And in Georgia's defense, it's an incredibly important position that the best Georgia can be always includes being as good as possible at that spot. Is that a fair sort of evaluation of that overall situation?
Yeah, I think we're starting to see Georgia's defense change a little bit in terms of the way they use that end position. You know, for so long, it was Malik Herring, Tremont Waltar, you know, for most of Trayvon Walker's career, except for really, I would say, the end of his junior year. That's a position where they just ask you to do the dirty work. They're not going to let you get after the quarterback a whole lot. You're probably coming off the field on obvious third down passing situations. And so I think with you see Michael Williams moving to outside linebacker a little bit, the way that they are playing Gabe Harris at that position, a guy who was thought to be an outside linebacker coming in, you wonder if maybe they're just starting to recruit more guys who can sort of be that true sort of end edge rusher that can give you more versatility on a down by down basis. And so if Akinabon is able to come in and do that and play that role moving forward, I think it only further continues to show that Georgia wants to be more versatile and potentially get more out of that 3-4 defensive end position, even though in reality they're playing a lot more like 3-3-5, 4-2-5, not to get too in the weeds here in terms of scheme, but you look at the way that they've tried to bulk up at that outside linebacker position in recent years. You know, Damon Wilson is bigger, Sam Mpemba is bigger, Quintavious Johnson, who they brought in this last cycle, is a bigger player than they just used to bring in there. And so I think using them in that way sort of only further blurs the line in terms of what you're getting out of that defensive end position. And it wouldn't surprise me in the slightest moving forward if you do see that position become a good bit more productive in the Georgia defense, just because of the way they have to respond to it in terms of recruiting and finding ways to get those guys on the field.
All right, in the time we have left, I want to talk about what is the juiciest rumor out there today, as four-star quarterback Ryan Montgomery gets ready to announce his commitment tomorrow. Montgomery, of course, from the state of Ohio. And we don't have to sugarcoat this. There are a lot of very prominent online predictions that have Montgomery coming to UGA, which leads us back to the same questions we were asking the day when Matt Zollars was getting ready to make his choice of, well, if this quarterback comes, what does that mean for the in-state five-star Julian Juju Lewis? I think it's fair to point out that the smoke around Montgomery to Georgia right now is more prolific than anything probably involving Zollars prior to his announcement, where I think there was some intrigue about what he might do. In the case of Montgomery, a little bit more steam involving him to UGA here right now. We'll see if that becomes true. But once again, Connor, this is interesting both in terms of Montgomery as a player in his own right, obviously very good, but also about how this would impact Julian Juju Lewis, who's got, I mean, last check anyway, an official visit slated for Georgia at the end of May, and yet you've got now a second Georgia quarterback target getting ready to make a commitment announcement before Lewis even allegedly, you know, visits Georgia officially at the end of next month. What do you make of all of this?
I believe that Georgia is getting out of the Juju Lewis business. You know, if you believe the online chatter, you talk to people around the program. Look, Ryan Montgomery is a name they've recruited a lot longer than they did recruit Matt Zollars. There was a more, I think, established relationship there. And yes, you know, Montgomery may not have the high upside ceiling, but I think when you watch G-Day and you look out there and you see they don't have Ryan Pugliese, he's dealing with a knee injury. And while it's not expected to be serious, you see Georgia only has two scholarship quarterbacks out there. And if we all expect Carson to have the season that he has and he leaves after this season, Georgia just needs bodies at the quarterback position. I know we were talking earlier about the ability to retain depth, and Jeff Sintel's brought this point up. Just the idea that you're going to get to four scholarship quarterbacks this spring, I think, is going to be really tough, because I don't think Kirby just wants to take a guy to take a guy. And so I think in landing potentially Ryan Montgomery, you shore up that quarterback position moving forward, where you are, yes, you obviously have Jared Curtis, and he's sort of the high ceiling upside player that you have moving forward. And then you land a guy in Montgomery who, look, for all the five stars that Georgia's recruited at the position, Jake Fromm was not a five-star. Stetson Bennett was not a five-star. Carson Beck was not a five-star. And so their most successful quarterbacks have been guys that have been willing to come in and develop and wait their turn. And I think Montgomery fits that mold in terms of what Kirby Smart is looking for. He comes from an athletic family, multi-sport athlete. His brother plays at Ohio State. And so I think, you know, with obviously all the smoke around Juju Lewis, the fact that he's taking visits elsewhere, USC he's still committed to, but Auburn is a program involved, Colorado is a program involved, and with what we know about those programs, look, they have very aggressive NIL fronts. And I know Juju had the tweet last week or 2 weeks ago, whenever it was, saying he is focused first on development. That can be true, but he is also, I think NIL is very clearly a factor in his recruitment. His dad has given some pretty strong quotes in that regard. And so I think that this makes it clear with Georgia what their quarterback plan is moving forward. I expect them to still try and recruit Juju Lewis even after the potential commitment of Ryan Montgomery, but I think that'll make it pretty clear to Juju Lewis that, like, hey, if you want to come here, you're going to have to come here and want to come here and probably take a little bit less on the NIL front. And I just don't know if he's going to want to do that.
All right, let me try to do three quick follow-up. We're going late here, so I want to try to make this as quick as I possibly can. Same question I asked you the other day when we were talking about Matt Zollars. In 2024, Georgia was all about taking two quarterbacks. And Ryan Pugliese's recruit is a similar recruiting ranking of both Zollars and Montgomery here right now. Is it out of the realm of possibility that Georgia could go after both Montgomery and Lewis? Because that's really not all that different from what they were trying to do a year ago with both Pugliese and Raiola.
I would not be shocked in the slightest. Again, I just brought up the idea that they're going to still recruit Juju Lewis, But I think now having Montgomery makes you just on a much more solid ground, and you don't have to worry about where he's, you know, the fact that, again, he's still committed to USC, something he has been throughout this entire process, and the fact that Auburn, Alabama, Colorado have all made strong pushes for him. I think it harkens back to maybe the Arch Manning recruitment, where, you know, Georgia can feel comfortable with what they have at the quarterback position outside of Arch and really continue to push all in. I think they're going to, again, try and take two quarterbacks here, but when you have Jared Curtis in that 2026 class already committed, it lessens the true need to go out there and do this, because I think so much of the scrambling around the 2025 quarterback position came about because, in fact, they weren't able to take two quarterbacks in the last cycle when Dylan Raiola flipped elsewhere.
And then, you know, a lot of people are going to take the Zollers thing and the Montgomery thing, the sort of what seems like it's sort of an accelerated timeline of both of them, and Georgia seemingly being open for business for either commitment. They're going to take that as a little bit of a rebuke against Juju. And the other day, Juju kind of fired back at what I think he thought was some people kind of misinterpreting his intentions or misinterpreting what he's all about as a player. I mean, do you think there's a chance that Julian Lewis has been unfairly misunderstood and maybe kind of cast as some sort of NIL villain in a way that he says he's not? Do you think that somehow the narrative here is being unfair to Julian? Because I told this to Jeff the other day. He is not nearly as popular with my audience as I expected a five-star in-state quarterback to be. I don't quite know what to make of that. Is Julian Lewis getting a bad rap from just the prevailing chatter that's out there?
I can understand Julian Lewis's frustrations with the way that he is discussed. You know, he's obviously a very gifted, very talented quarterback, someone who has put up huge numbers in his first 2 years at Carrollton High School. He's going to do so once again this coming season. But the thing that I go back to is there's an ESPN interview that his dad did in February of 2023. So after his freshman season there at Carrollton, and you're going out there and you're giving these quotes about, you know, my son could be worth $500,000 at the high school level in terms of the NIL that he could potentially bring in. I think so often with stardom, it's the first thing that comes to mind is what people remember you for. And from a national, from a wider introduction point of view, most of the people that they first heard about Julian Lewis, it was in this ESPN interview. And so I think the fact that that number and those numbers were so attached to him from the start, the fact that he commits to USC, a program that does have a very robust NIL arm. I think when those are the first things you sort of get known for, it's always hard to sort of shake those. And so the fact that, again, for so long he's been committed to USC and all that, I think that that's why this reputation has followed Julian Lewis. And I can certainly understand his frustrations with it, because at the same point in time, you look at the way Lincoln Riley's been able to develop quarterbacks. Baker Mayfield, number one overall pick, Heisman Trophy winner. Kyler Murray, number one overall pick, Heisman Trophy winner. Caleb Williams, number one overall pick, Heisman, or potential number one overall pick, soon to be number one overall pick, Heisman Trophy winner. This guy gets great quarterback play out of whoever he seems to think is good enough to come play for him. So you can understand why Lewis believes, hey, like, I can totally spin this as this is the best place for me in my future. But I think because of those first comments and because of the way so many people were first introduced to Julian Lewis, I think that's why this narrative has sort of stuck with him.
All right, final thing real quick, and you kind of touched on this a little bit. You know, when I look at a position like defensive line, I would say, okay, it's great that Georgia sort of coached up Jordan Davis and got more out of him than his recruiting profile suggested, but that's the exception to the rule. For the most part, great defensive lines are going to be built by great defensive line recruits. You have to have elite players to have a successful position group. But at quarterback, you know, not only was Stetson Bennett a former walk-on, I mean, people kind of forget that Carson Beck was rated outside the top 300 by the National Services when he came to Georgia. Some of that was because of some weird circumstances with the senior year, you know, whatever, I guess. But the facts are he still was sort of outside the top 300 as a recruit. My question is, Connor, does the Beck story and the Bennett story before that prove that Georgia doesn't really need the elite recruit to have success at the quarterback position? Not that Montgomery's not elite. I mean, he's four-star. That's still a, you know, fairly high value, but it's not the same thing as Julian Lewis, who, you know, could have been the number one player in the country if he stayed in the class of 2026. Does Georgia need the elite recruit to be successful on offense at the quarterback position?
Brandon, who's the greatest quarterback of all time?
Tom Brady.
Who's the, in terms of raw talent, who's the second greatest? Would you say Patrick Mahomes is up there already?
Yeah, I would say he's already up there for sure. For sure.
Patrick Mahomes was a three-star recruit coming out of high school. Yeah. Tom Brady was a six-round draft pick. We've been evaluating quarterbacks for a very long time. There's always been, I think, a lot of scrutiny around the way that position is evaluated. It's just not something we're ever going to be able to figure out and nail down with a T. I think you can look at Drew Allar, five-star quarterback guy that was praised to be everything. Some of the struggles that you've seen him endure at Penn State. It's just really hard and difficult to evaluate this position. Yep. So I think if you're a Georgia fan, while yes, you certainly are more interested in guys that have higher star rankings. And look, we in the media do our fair part in propping those guys up and hyping them up. I think the quarterback position has proven to be so difficult, so impossible to evaluate, that some guys just develop on their own, and you've got to, and I think Georgia has earned this right in the way that you have seen Carson Beck get better. I think Georgia has earned the right to have this, hey, like, we're going to develop our guys in our way, in a way that we believe can get the most out of these guys. And for Georgia so far, it's worked. And so I understand, you know, watching stars and five-star players attract more attention. But when Georgia deems someone is good enough to come play quarterback for them, they usually end up being right in those regards.
Connor, it's a really interesting conversation. I know we went long, but really good stuff on a day in which a lot is going on. So we'll let you get back to covering all of that. And, of course, we'll talk to you here very soon on our program there as well. Thanks for being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Serve Pro here today.
Yep, as always, it's a pleasure.
Good stuff.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, I mean, just to follow on that real quick, and we're going to try to make this as quick as we can. We obviously have made our bones around here, talking about four-star recruit this and five-star recruit that. Of course, stars matter when it comes to recruiting. But I do believe as we move forward, especially just given the, as we talked about before, the sort of roster balance you got to find, kind of a transfer portal NIL age, I think examining the positions where stars matter the most is going to probably be a worthwhile endeavor. In other words, as I said, I truly believe this, and I believe the research would back me up. You want to have great defensive lines? For the most part, those are going to be built on the backs of great defensive line recruits. Yes, you'll have a Jordan Davis and to a certain extent kind of a Devontae Wyatt. You're going to have some exceptions to the rule, but those are going to still be the exceptions compared to the more likely scenario, which is the sort of elite players that come in. I think offensive line, especially the tackle positions, that's going to probably be true there as well. But look at some of the stuff on offense where, you know, at receiver, you know, not just at Georgia, but like Chris Olave, Justin Jefferson, even Jamar Chase was a four-star, but, you know, certainly not even close to a five-star. You know, you're going to see, for whatever reason, the wide receiver position seems to be a spot where non-elite recruits sometimes blossom. You know, the quarterback position, as we said, you know, Stetson Bennett, former walk-on, but, you know, Carson Beck was not a five-star. Carson Beck was, you know, a sort of 300-something rated, you know, four-star, and that's working just fine for Georgia. I'm not telling you moving forward that, don't worry about so-and-so's ranking, because clearly that's what we do. We pay attention to recruiting rankings. But I do believe moving forward, recruiting rankings are going to matter at some positions more so than others. I can't fully explain this, but for some reason, the defensive rating of players on defense seems to matter more than the defensive rating of players on offense. For whatever reason, when you look at how that translates to production in the field, it just seems to be true. So it is worth paying attention to. Now, let's get ready to go cruise around the SEC courtesy of Royal Caribbean here today. And I will tell you, I am getting really excited about our Dog Nation cruise. And I think in life, it's just nice to have things to be excited about and things to look forward to. And y'all joke with me about it, but it is true. I enjoy taking Royal Caribbean cruise vacations. I enjoy seeing all the various things on the cruise ships and the stuff on the new cruise ships. As we talked before, you know, you got some good, fun, new stuff debuting with Royal Caribbean here in 2024. I love visiting the ports, you know, going to Nassau in the Bahamas, going to Perfect Day, Coco Cay, you know, seeing this, experiencing all of this. I do genuinely look forward to what we're going to get a chance to enjoy. And I'm so proud to show off Allure of the Seas to everybody coming up here in just a few days there as well. So, you know, if you need something to get look forward to, if you want to be as excited about something here in 2024 as I am about being on Allure of the Seas here coming up, reach out to Jessica Slater. Give her a call, 770-718-9147. That's 770-718-9147. You can also email her, jslater@dreamvacations.com. And she can help you plan a Royal Caribbean cruise vacation. For those of you who are going to be on board Allure of the Seas with us, I think you're going to love it. It's going to be a great time, and I can't wait to come back and tell everybody about that here really soon. I was going to give you some information about how next week's going to look and feel for us. Instead, let me just kind of stay on the tracks here because we're kind of running a little bit late. We'll give you more of that information here coming up. As we're cruising around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean here today, I thought it was really interesting to see Lane Kiffin post, I guess, whatever Ole Miss was doing for a spring game. And by the way, at some point in time, we got to get more into this. Some of these spring games, we talked about this some last week, but in actuality, some of them are even wilder than you realize in terms of how not like football they were. So at some point, we got to talk more about that. But Lane Kiffin was complaining about what he called a poor system that college football has in place right now with the craziness of the transfer portal and now the potential for unlimited transfers. And that's one of the things that is supposedly supposed to make this portal cycle even a little bit more, you know, wild than maybe last year's spring cycle was, is the fact that players no longer feel like they're contained by just a single transfer anymore. And Kiffin was saying, listen, we probably utilize this system as well as anybody has, but he says, even I think it's still kind of a crazy, you know, crazy system overall. And here's the only thing that I would say, because I think a lot of people hear so much complaining about all this stuff right now that it kind of goes in one ear and out the other, and it kind of ends up being just sort of like a lot of mumbo jumbo after a while. Here is all that I wish for college football. I don't, frankly, want to prohibit players from getting paid. Not only am I not anti-NIL, as I've told y'all before, I wasn't anti-McDonald's bag really either. You know, getting paid under the table, that's between you and the IRS. But in terms of, you know, the allegations of the past of improper benefits and things like that, I don't really care about that either. I'm not into people's wallets. I'm just not. Well, you know, whatever you're getting paid is sort of your business there for the most part. So I'm not anti-money. I am anti-chaos, and I do believe that Kiffin's right. Even if you're utilizing the portal well, it's still sort of a chaotic system. But what I don't want to do is sacrifice everything that's made college football, in order to get a more sensible system. If I was in control of this sport and had the power to do whatever, what I would like to see happen is that for the compensation model to remain something similar to the NIL model that it is now. And if the conferences themselves want to pay out of the TV contracts the players, pay the players, then they would do so as an NIL payment. You're not an employee, you know, you're not getting a W-2. We're simply paying you an NIL payment through the same NIL apparatus that's already in place. In fact, in the future, that's what I think should happen. That's the way I think the players ought to get paid. In the kind of NIL infrastructure that's already built up, but paid by the conference or paid by the you know, whatever entity, college football playoff, whatever it is, but paid as an NIL payment. That's the way I'd like to see compensation handled moving forward. And I would like for college athletics to have the freedom once again to make some rules. This idea that you can't have any rules because you're not making the players employees, to me, and I'm no lawyer, that just seems made up. For decades, the NCAA was winning in court. All of a sudden now they can't buy a win in court, literally. And somehow it's, well, what are you going to do? It's the law. But it just seems like to me, as a non-legal expert, that the way in which the laws are being interpreted is now completely different. You know, can we just sort of make up some new interpretation that gives the NCAA or whoever it is that's running college athletics moving forward some sort of like sensible control over, we have some rules, those rules are respected, and the players are being paid, but not in some sort of like employee style way that kind of reimagines what college athletics is and frankly makes it something other than college athletics, but paid well in the NIL system that's kind of been built up over the course of the last couple of years. And by the way, that could be TV money. If you can find a way to make that happen legally, you know, to me, you've sort of found the solution that can make what Lane Kiffin describes as a poor system, some of that can possibly go away. Elijah Herring, who had a very good year for Tennessee a year ago, leading tackle on the team, is entering the transfer portal. You go to the Vols message boards, the various places where Tennessee fans get together. They don't seem to be complaining about this too bad. Once again, essentially resigning themselves to what we've been saying is, hey, you're bound to lose some guys. And in Tennessee's case, they think they're deep enough at linebacker to overcome this. And this doesn't appear to be just fan chatter. This appears to be something with a little bit of substance to it, which makes you think a little bit more about Tennessee, doesn't it? Because, you know, if they're shrugging off losing a linebacker, you know, given the fact that there, I think, is a little bit of excitement about Nico Iamaleva right now, does this give Tennessee, who I would probably have somewhere around the middle of the pack in the SEC, does this give them some belief they could be a little bit better than that? For instance, I think one of the things we're going to do in some of the next week's shows are some sort of comparisons between one SEC team and another, and not always obvious comparisons in some cases. To me, Tennessee sort of sits right there alongside of Texas A&M. Similar win projection for the upcoming season, sort of similarly out of sight, out of mind in comparison to teams who are getting more chatter. Is there a chance that Tennessee exceeds those expectations? At least the reaction to Herring's transfer suggests that might be the case. And by the way, did you enjoy the picture of Arian Smith sort of standing over Herring a minute ago? A pretty good find by our producer, Jay Black, there on that here today. I'll also give you this finally. Nick Saban set to make his debut as an ESPN analyst. It seems like he's on ESPN all the time. I mean, he's become a very public face here and sort of the winner of his coaching career, but officially making his debut as an analyst on the NFL draft coming up. So truly a new era upon us as Nick Saban becomes a talking head on TV. My guess is, and my suspicion, he actually probably gets pretty good reviews for some of his work. I think he's actually probably destined to probably be pretty good at this, maybe more so than maybe I even wish that he would be. But we'll see that coming up here really soon. And we'll make that cruising around the SEC courtesy of Royal Caribbean. Now, before we wrap up, I want to give a shout-out to our friends at Precision Garage Door. We talk about five-star recruits. Well, our friends at Precision Garage Door have a five-star reputation for service. That's what they're already always about. Answering the phones all the time, 24-7. You can get in touch with them. You can get that quote, or you can get that emergency work done if that's what you need. They're always there. Dog Nation's choice to get the job done for you when it comes to our friends at Precision Garage Door. And the good news is there's a $29 service fee that's waived on any time you get some repair work done. So it's a neighborly company. You can trust them to do good work for you. Reach out and get your quote today. It's precisiondoorgeorgia.com. One more time, precisiondoorgeorgia.com. And as we wrap up here today, we'll do so with a golden shoe. One of the things I love about being in Athens on game days in the fall and on G-Day, a chance to spend some time with some Georgia fans, and some of y'all are nice enough to then share your pictures. How about Elijah Pitts, one of our great folks in our audience, comes over to see us there on Saturday. He was on the show live, and if you come over and see us for one of these shows, we'll give you a chance to see that there live. Elijah, and be on the show and share your comments, and Elijah shared his thoughts on G-Day there on Saturday, as so many others did there as well. Really fun time. Appreciate Elijah coming by. We'll give him a golden shoe for that. Also, lousy, stinking Gators. Boy, tough times to be a Florida fan here as of late. And it doesn't get any easier when you think about the fact that it's been 1,256 days since Florida's beaten Georgia. We love reveling in that because, frankly, we just believe that a good Georgia fan is a Gator hater first and foremost. That's why Eddie sits on the desk each and every day. Sometimes he's a little far off to the left. You don't always get a chance to see him. But that's why he's here, because we believe that a good Georgia fan is a Gator hater first and foremost. Eddie may be blind. He may not be able to see, but he can see that, that it's a good day to be a dog and always a great day to be a Gator hater. So y'all have a great day. Thanks for being here on Dog Nation Daily presented by ServPro. We'll see you back here again tomorrow.